You're listening to At Any Rate, our global research podcast, where we take a look at the story behind some of the biggest trends, themes, and industries in markets today. I'm Phoebe White, lead inflation strategist at JP Morgan, and on the phone with me today, I have Jay Barry, head of government bond strategy. We published our 2021 outlook just before Thanksgiving, looking for higher yields, a steeper curve, and wider TIPS breakevens. And since we published, this view has come to fruition. 10-year yields have risen more than 20 basis points. The twos tens curve has steepened by 15 basis points, and TIPS breakevens have widened by 30 basis points. However, since we've written, quite a bit has changed, and we've made some changes to our forecast. So Jay, can you quickly run through what's changed over the last 6 weeks?
Sure. Thanks, Phoebe. I think there's been a couple of really important developments. The first is that during the lame duck session in December, there was support that coalesced around passing more fiscal stimulus, and Congress passed the $900 billion COVID Response and Relief Act late last month, about 3 months earlier than we expected. This is important because we think this reduces the risks of the economy contracting in the first quarter of this year, particularly with the increased COVID infection rate nationwide. Second, and more recently, the results of the Georgia Senate runoff elections last week. This leaves the Democrats in control of the White House, the House, and the Senate, and Democrats will have a very slim majority in Congress, but we think they will use the reconciliation process to pass another round of fiscal stimulus. We're looking for another $900 billion in fiscal stimulus to be passed in the next couple of months, and we think this package will include payments to taxpayers, another round of extended unemployment benefits, funds for vaccine distribution, as well as state and local aid. On the margin, we think this is adding 1.5 percentage points to GDP in 2021, which will leave growth running 5.3% this year in our forecasts, and another 0.5% to growth in 2022. And we look for growth to run about 2.6% next year in 2022. Finally, we also think this means that the labor market will tighten further, and we look for the unemployment rate to decline to 5% by year end 21, compared with 5.5% in our previous forecasts.
So how do these changes to the growth forecast change your outlook for rates and the curve in 2021?
We really think it's a continuation of the same theme that we wrote in the outlook, which these outcomes mean that we are likely to see higher yields and a steeper curve. And we think there's a couple of reasons behind this rationale. First is that clearly 2021 is setting up to be the strongest year for real GDP growth in approximately 20 plus years. Now, Treasury yields have shown reduced sensitivity to growth expectations recently, I think in large part because of the Fed and other DM central banks' inability to hit their 2% inflation targets. But nonetheless, they do remain a significant driver. And we have found in our work that 10-year yields tend to rise by 15 to 20 basis points for each 1 percentage point increase in consensus growth expectations. Thus, adding another 1.5 percentage points onto growth this year is meaningful, we think, for long-term yields. Second, combine this with the likelihood we think that the bar is only being raised for the Fed to take more actions here and change the duration of its asset purchases. The minutes of the December FOMC meeting indicate that the committee had little appetite to change the course of its asset purchases, and only a couple of participants were open to extending the duration of those Treasury purchases. Over the interim, since that meeting in the middle of December, the outlook has only improved further, so we think the Fed is likely to stand pat here. And that matters because the supply of long-duration treasuries to the market is increasing substantially. And we look for gross duration supply, excluding the Fed's purchases, to increase 2.5-fold from what we saw last year in 2020. On balance, with growth looking stronger, with the Fed standing pat and duration supply increasing, we now adjusted our forecasts and we look for 10-year yields to rise to 1.25% by mid-year and 1.45% by year-end 21. And both of these forecasts are about 15 basis points higher than our previous projections from our 2021 outlook. Now, while we think this is very meaningful longer out the curve, we've made very little adjustments to our year-end targets at the front end. We can see yields rising modestly at the front end, but only really to the top end of the Fed funds target range, as the Fed is expected to remain on hold for the next few years, and its shift to flexible average inflation targeting is expected to keep policy expectations relatively well anchored as well.
Thanks. So you mentioned the better outlook potentially raises the bar for increased Fed purchases, but can you just expand on that? And does the change in growth and unemployment rate forecasts have implications for the Fed in 2021?
Yeah, that's a great question. So maybe two parts to the asset purchase question. First, you know, we had entertained the likelihood that the Fed would extend the duration of its asset purchases in December because it appeared that the outlook was weakening as growth was starting to slow amid an increase in COVID infection rates. Even at the time, the Fed did not feel comfortable extending the duration of its asset purchases. And one could argue that with this next round of fiscal stimulus being passed early and expectations of more stimulus coming in the spring, that this would reduce the need for the Fed to add more stimulus to the economy when fiscal is actually taking strong hold here and we're moving towards a more widely available COVID vaccine to the broader community over the next few months. The second piece of the puzzle is probably related to the moves in rates that we've seen. And you said at the outset that 10-year yields have moved by 20 basis points over the last 6 weeks. And maybe this could lend itself towards the Fed trying to cap yields in a more aggressive fashion. But if anything, this move to higher yield seems for all the right reasons because it's increased growth expectations. And if anything, real yields and tips, as you'll talk about, remain near historic lows and tips break evens have only begun to widen. So we don't see the need for the Fed to take further action here. Instead, we think it will hold the pace of its purchases steady at $80 billion a month. But this does give us confidence that the Fed will likely announce tapering at the end of this year and begin a slow tapering process into 2022. So right now, it doesn't mean anything for asset purchases, but because the unemployment rate falls to 5%, we think this will meet the Fed's definition of substantial further progress, allowing a slow taper to begin then. Meanwhile, on the policy front side, even though we think it's possible the unemployment rate gets back towards 4% by late next year, the Fed, vis-a-vis its flexible average inflation targeting framework, is very much welcoming an overshoot of inflation. We don't think that this would meet its definition of maximum employment, much less an overshoot. So in all likelihood, it keeps liftoff at probably something like 3 years away, and that should keep front-end yields relatively well anchored as well.
Great. So let's just switch gears and talk about issuance here. How do you think the change in our fiscal stimulus and deficit outlook impact Treasury issuance in 2021? And do you think this will lead to further increases in auction sizes for coupon Treasuries?
So we've raised our deficit forecasts for fiscal 21 up to $3.2 trillion and up to $2.1 trillion for fiscal 22. And that's going to now leave the deficit in fiscal 21 slightly larger than we saw last year. Clearly, this means more Treasury issuance than our previous forecast, but in our construct, it's relatively minor from a duration perspective. So the stimulus that was passed late last year repurposed all the money set aside for Fed credit facilities, which is reducing the amount of new issuance to finance that package, as most of the stimulus passed will be funded out of the Treasury's cash balance. And given that development, it would have meant a more decisive drawdown in the stock of T-bills outstanding than we had previously forecast. Now adding another round of stimulus in, we forecast $2.45 trillion in net privately held borrowing of Treasuries this year. And we see really all this net issuance coming in coupons. But given the increases that Treasury made to auction sizes last year, it's created over $1 trillion in additional borrowing capacity vis-a-vis notes, bonds, tips, and FRNs compared to last year. Thus, we actually think that Treasury coupon auction sizes will remain steady at these cruising altitudes this year. But we look for the T-bill market to shrink, and we're projecting minus $338 billion of net privately held borrowing in T-bills in 2021.
So what does that drawdown in bills outstanding mean for short-term markets, and what are the risks around the debt ceiling?
You know, I think a couple of important factors there. You know, the drawdown in T-bills outstanding do mean that valuations at the front of the curve with respect to T-bill OIS valuations and outright T-bill yield levels are going to remain relatively rich. But we don't think it means that interest rates at the short end of the curve, and particularly short T-bills, are going to turn negative. Because as we've written about in the past, it seems like at least some of the demand in T-bills that's emerged over the past 10 months is coming from investors who are non-core investors at the front end of the Treasury curve. And there are other available sources of investment for this community of investors. For example, there's the overnight reverse repo facility. There's the foreign repo facility. We also think that there will be increased tri-party repo supply available. So even though T-bill net issuance is turning negative and that there's been strong growth in AUM at money market funds, we don't think that this is going to drag interest rates at the short end of the curve into negative territory, but it will keep valuations in check. You know, turning to the debt ceiling, the current debt ceiling legislation is set to expire on August 1st, so less than 7 months from now. And the debt ceiling's been suspended, it's not been raised, which really means that in previous instances of this legislation, that the Treasury Department has been precluded from pre-funding any of these issuance needs, and it has to have its cash balance at the same place it was on the date that the last legislation was passed. Right now, that would mean it would have to be down at $117 billion by August 1st, or about $1.4 trillion lower than current levels. That sounds like a big number, and it is, but we think $1 trillion of this decline can come organically. The first is because about $570 billion of the funds used to finance the December stimulus package will come out of this cash balance and organically be drawn down in the next few months. The second is that we think that most of the existing PPP loans that were taken out last year will be converted to grants at some point this year. It's been a very slow application process, which should decline the TGA by another $400 billion or so. But that being said, there still leaves it with a pretty sizable portion to take down. And if there's no legislation passed or no new legislation passed by the early part of the summer, it's going to mean that T-bill net issuance is going to turn significantly negative in June and July in order to facilitate a larger drop in the TGA. And that's really penciled into our issuance forecast. So it could mean that even though altogether we think that the market will be able to deal with this decline in net bill issuance with relative, I wouldn't call it ease, but it will be able to deal with it, that it could become somewhat acute in the early part of the summer if this occurs. The wild card really is legislation. And there's been speculation that the Congress could use reconciliation to pass another debt ceiling legislation. While it's certainly possible, and it's been done in the past, this would require a clean debt ceiling raise rather than a suspension. And we haven't heard anything on this front thus far. Moreover, given the other priorities that Congress needs to take care of first, we're not sure this is necessarily on the docket, but that could potentially change the outlook for the TGA. Because if Congress finds a way to attach this to a reconciliation-based piece of legislation, it could prevent the TGA from having to come crashing down in the early part of the summer. Now Phoebe, why don't we turn to the inflation-linked markets? We spent a lot of time talking about what we expect to happen nominals here. What do you think the impact will be of increased growth and larger fiscal stimulus on the TIPS market in 2021?
Sure. Well, despite the better growth trajectory, we really haven't changed our inflation forecast for 2021 much at all. We still see a very gradual rise in inflation from here. I think what's really changed is that with the quicker forecasted return to full employment and more support expected from the fiscal policy side, the risk of persistently below target inflation in coming years is lower. So even with the positive vaccine news we had gotten in November, we were still somewhat concerned that as policy supports rolled off in coming years, that the recovery could start to stall, limiting the Fed's ability at the lower bound to achieve its goal of moderately above target inflation. So now we are more confident that the Fed will be successful, and it makes sense that markets are pricing greater credibility with this framework. And we've seen that in the move in break evens. And from here, as we move into the second half, if the recovery accelerates, nominal yields are lifting and energy prices are rising, we think we can see benchmark break-evens continue to widen and move closer to 225 basis points. So in tens, that's about 25 basis points above our previous forecast. And broadly, we made the largest revisions to the front end of the curve. And we now see the broad break-even curve flattening more than we previously expected. So combine that with the nominal yield forecast you discussed, we still look for intermediate to long end real yields moving higher over the coming quarters.
Now, just coming from what you've said right now, Phoebe, the move that you're looking for break evens over the balance of this year, over the next 11 months or so, is actually smaller than we've seen just since we wrote our outlook around Thanksgiving time. Now, given that construct, what do you think about valuations in the TIPS market as they stand right now?
Sure. So while the developments were bullish for break-evens these past 6 weeks or so, everything that you outlined earlier, the move in break-evens that we've gotten has been very quick and aggressive. TIPS sharply outperformed versus their drivers, and actually 10-year break-evens appeared as much as 18 basis points rich to our fair value model last Thursday. They've given back some of that outperformance in the last couple of sessions, but valuations still appear somewhat rich here. So because of that, we think break-evens can start to settle into a range over the near term. And then more broadly, we still look for break-evens to move wider over the medium term, moving into the second half of the year, as I mentioned.
Great. Thanks, Phoebe.
So I think that's a good place to close. Jay, thank you for joining me. Institutional clients of JP Morgan can find more on these topics on JP Morgan Markets at jpmm.com or reaching out directly with questions. Stay tuned for more episodes of At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast series. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read JP Morgan research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2021 JP Morgan Chase & Co. All rights reserved. This episode was recorded on January 11th, 2021.